So you might know that I am actively in the middle of getting certified to become a forest therapy guide with the Association of Nature and Forest Therapy. It has been such a fascinating experience for me. Like I've shared with you earlier, I am getting less interested in just focusing on houseplants and more interested in nature and plants as a whole and how they can help us live happier lives. A huge practice that really supports this is forest therapy or forest bathing. I can't tell you how many people I say, I'm getting certified to be a forest therapy guide, and their answer is, that sounds so cool, what is it? So today, I'm lucky enough to be joined by Amos Clifford, the founder of the Association of Nature and Forest Therapy, and one of his top guides and trainers, Nadine Mazzola, to unpack what forest bathing and forest therapy really is, and why it's so much more than a hike in the woods. In fact, it's not a hike at all. We explore the science behind why forest bathing can actually serve as a nervous system reset and the deeply relational magic that helps you remember who you are when you spend some concentrated time outdoors.
Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Hi, plant friends. My name is Maria. I am the host of this podcast. I'm here to help you care for plants and grow joy while doing so. If you're new here, welcome. If you are a returning guest, welcome home. I'm excited to bring you this conversation because it's not just a straight interview. Yes, I'm interviewing Amos and Nadine all about forest bathing, but I am actively getting certified in Amos's certification program, the Association of Nature and Forest Therapy, on how to become a forest therapy guide. And I very much hope in the future to lead digital forest therapy sessions with our community. So stay tuned because that will hopefully be coming. But really, what I have found is people don't really get what forest therapy is. And it is such an easy, accessible practice to bring so much joy into your life. So we're so lucky to have very practiced and informed guests today shedding so much light on this beautiful practice that means so much to me. So without further ado, here is Amos Clifford and Nadine Mazzola. Welcome to Growing Joy, Amos and Nadine.
Thank you.
I have to start off our interview with this question first, because ever since I've been getting certified with ANFT on becoming a forest therapy guide, every time I tell someone in my normal life, not in my, you know, spiritual life or plant life, I'm getting the certification to be a forest therapy guide, they always say, oh my God, that sounds so cool. But what is that? So I would love to ask each of you, when you meet someone new and you tell them what you do, they look at you a little bewildered. What is your answer to that question normally to someone who's never heard this word before? And Amos, I'll ask you to start.
Well, when someone wants to know just what is forest bathing, I say it's just very simple, going into the forest or any natural area and going slowly and enjoying the sensory experiences that you have. So that's a simple version. And was a part of your question also what it means to be a guide?
A forest therapy guide. I feel like that term very much entices people and also triggers some curiosity.
Yeah, a lot of that is just helping people to slow down and to stay aware of what their sensory experience is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of what being a guide is about. There's, of course, some details, if we want to drill down into that, there's a whole philosophy of guiding and a skill set that goes with that. And if you want to drill down into that later in this conversation, we can do that.
Oh,
yes. Let's pass this question on to Nadine now.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll definitely be drilling down in a few minutes. So Nadine, what when you get that bewildered look, what do you say?
So I love to use one of the translations of the term forest bathing, which is taking in the atmosphere of the forest or the place where we are. and connecting through our senses. And I always like to add, for those viewers that can see us, I always like to add like that embodied part of looking around so they get a sense of that. And for explaining about being a guide, personally, I love to say it's one of the most joyous things that has happened in my life. But also, I like to make analogies through different educational or class experiences we might take, and the difference of doing things on our own versus being led and having that space held by someone. It can often be really supportive, and it just kind of, yeah, it changes the vibe of the experience to be with instead of be on your own. But we all have our own preferences.
Yeah. I feel like now, you know, I'm only halfway through my certification, but I very much feel like we hold space to remind people what they already know. You know, so much of what I'm learning in this certification is stuff that intrinsically I know and have to be reminded because life is so fast that I just forget. But the container for me, the certification, is pushing me to return to the present, to return to these foundational inherent knowings as being a part of nature, which I find very interesting. Nadine, let's stick with you. When was your first time that you heard about forest bathing, forest therapy, nature therapy? These are all kind of interchangeable words for the topic that we're talking about today. What was your first experience with it? And how did you become the forest therapy guide that you are today?
I first heard about it by overhearing a conversation with two colleagues of mine, and one was saying to the other, have you heard about this thing called forest bathing, forest therapy? You like walking your dog in the woods, you should check it out. Okay. So I immediately went home and Googled it and found an Oprah magazine article and found my way quickly to the Association of Nature and Forest Therapy website. And I remember calling Amos several times in the office and asking about the program. And sometimes I'd be out in the woods with my dog when I was asking him questions. Like most of my students, because I'm now a trainer, but I really, for myself, there was just a pull that it's hard to put words to of this is really drawing me to it, something I want. Something that appeals to my heart, something deep inside of me. So within a month, I was gone and attended a training in North Carolina and then started my guiding practice and have had an active guiding practice ever since. And it's been one of the, again, great change and joy in my life. This also all happened right as a time as I was finishing up treatment for breast cancer. And I was really focused on how to support my own immune system after treatment. And so when I found the Oprah magazine article and started to read different things about the science and immune benefits, that was really personally relevant to my life at that time. But I was also at a point where I was really looking to make a change and do something new in my work life. And so those were parts of it.
That's beautiful. Amos, you're obviously the founder of ANFT. So you have a long storied background with forest bathing. So I'd love to hear, what was that first experience for you and kind of the timeline and trajectory of becoming one of the, you know, leading voices in the nature therapy, forest therapy space?
Well, when I was in my 50s, mid-50s, I started feeling like I'm on the threshold of coming into my elder years. And I had the question, what can I do that's useful with that time, a really precious time of being potentially an elder voice for culture? And I didn't know how to do that, but I was at that time very involved in a number of nature connection practices, ceremonial practices, and so on. And I went on a vision fast, and the vision fast really sharpened this question for me and gave me a little bit of an outline of an answer. So I knew that I was being very driven by concerns about the human impacts on the environment, the climate change, the plastics pollution in the ocean, and so on. And I thought, I'd like to do something about that if I can, but I'm just one person. What can I do? Mm-hmm. I don't know. And so I came out of that fast with that question very, very clear And I held that question for a while. And then Outside Magazine published an article by Florence Williams. It was on the cover. It said, take 2 hours of pine forest and call me in the morning.
I love
something
that.
Like that. Yeah, and I thought, I wonder what that's about. And she wrote about the Japanese practice Shinrin-yoku, and there were some things I liked about it. One was that it was a brief practice, an hour to 3 hours. You didn't have to go far. You didn't have to be in deep wilderness. To me, that translated into this could be very accessible to a lot of people. And I had a long background that involved many types of guiding and education and so on. And so I didn't really have the resources at the time to go to Japan and see what they were doing. I knew that I wanted to combine the various strands of my career into bringing this practice into the world. And I knew also that it was something sacred about it. And so to start the practice, to start the business ANFT, I began with a ceremony. This ceremony was in the western part of Sonoma County, Northern California, and a group of my friends and I sat around a campfire under the stars and surrounded by trees. And I made a commitment where I had a little potted Douglas fir tree, and I carried it through a symbolic threshold that we had built, and I put it on an altar, and I asked the trees for help, and I called on the unseen beings around us, and the stars, the fire, and the spirits of my friends gathered around, and I just said, look, this is going to be difficult, and I need help and support for it to succeed, and I commit to 10 years of my life to bring this forward. You know, there's something I read once that most people overestimate what they can get done in 1 year and underestimate what they can get done in 10 years.
Yes. And very few people get it in 10 years. I've seen, even in the houseplant space, like I've seen so many people start and stop a podcast or a business, you know, in 4 years because it's a grind.
I would not have done it without the ceremony. The ceremony is what got me through 10 years because it was very difficult in many different ways.
And how long ago was that ceremony now?
That was in 2012. And in 2022, we had a gathering here in Arizona where I live now to have a ceremony of completion of that commitment. And I thought at that time I would move on to something else, but ANFT's kind of got a grip on me, and I feel like it's still the right container for me to do my work as best I can.
I also feel like you were very early to market, you know, if we're going to talk about business terms, but I feel like there's been such a discourse around forest bathing in the last 2 years, you know? There's an upswing of interest. And I think the more chaotic the world gets, the more addicted to AI and screens the world gets, the more necessary this practice is going to become. So I think you're smart to stay in the game because I feel like this is just the beginning.
Yeah. At the time, no one was doing this right, as far as I knew outside of Japan. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about Korea yet. Korea has an incredible forest therapy infrastructure and program. But as far as I could tell, this was a Japanese thing. And at the same time, a universal kind of practice that has been a part of humanity's journey since we arrived.
Yeah.
And so I did have the advantage of being the first voice to bring it out of Japan and into the Western world. And from my work and the work of my colleagues like Nadine, Nadine's been doing this almost as long as me. She was in, what was that? Your cohort was cohort 4 or something? Yeah.
Wow.
And I remember well being up there in the mountains in North Carolina and Nadine being a part of that group. And I remember sitting around campfires in North Carolina. Nadine was there. And what did we do? We told stories to each other. We told the stories of our nature connection journeys. Mm-hmm. And there's something about just telling the stories.
Yes.
That is, I want to say, is essential and largely missing from our culture. And we built that into the standard sequence, as you notice. We pause as we're guiding and we gather everyone in a circle. And we ask a simple prompt. We just say, what are you noticing? And that's the moment when the stories start coming out. And the stories are essential for completion of whatever the experience is.
Have you ever daydreamed about being just a little more self-sufficient, but thought, yeah, it sounds cool, but it also sounds like a full-time job? That's what I love about this new book called The Productive Garden by Stephanie Hafferty. It makes this concept of self-sufficiency and homesteading feel more possible and practical than just something that is reserved for people on Instagram. So if you haven't heard of Stephanie, she's a leading no-dig gardening guru. She's got over 30 years of experience growing food, making household essentials from her garden and what she teaches every day. And this book really walks you through how to plan a self-sufficient plot, improve your soil naturally, compost effectively, store water, work with biodiversity instead of fighting it, and most importantly, grow abundant crops year-round using permaculture principles. But the cool thing about this book is it doesn't stop at growing. It also shows you how to use your harvest, from preserves and ferments to chemical-free cleaners, herbal body care, and even garden crafts. It's super fun. I love that Stephanie is all about not making it about perfection, but making it about resilience and creating a garden and a lifestyle that gives back. If any of this sounds good to you, grab yourself a copy of The Productive Garden by Stephanie Hafferty wherever books are sold and start building your own sustainable, self-sufficient garden today. It's so important because even with houseplants, I find like I've done 350 interviews at this point, and every single person I've interviewed, when I ask about their experience with houseplants or gardening or nature, everybody has a pretty strong connection and association with nature. It's just that some of the associations are negative, which have caused them to, you know, stay away. And some of them are positive, or some of them are kind of forgotten. I grew up immersed in it, and then I went to college and I got disconnected and I want to get reconnected. And telling the stories, identifying that, yes, you do have a place here, even if no matter what your experience is, you have experience, is so important. Let's go into, you know, you guys kind of defined forest bathing for us, going into a natural setting, immersing your senses for a lengthy period of time. A standard, you know, forest bathing experience is, you know, 2 to 3 hours. What is a general experience for someone who comes on a forest bathing experience with a guide? What would a participant experience in this? Because I think the interesting thing I've explored is the marketing of this forest bathing, nature therapy. Like, are we bathing? Are we putting our swimsuits on? Are we doing talk therapy in the forest? Is it a hike? Is it arduous? You know, these words bring up a lot of different feelings. So Nadine, maybe you start. What is that standard sequence experience that people would expect?
Yeah, well, first I can say after 10 years of doing this and guiding, it doesn't get any easier to try and explain it to people, yeah. Or at least not for me. And, you know, there's a range. And so I think just being able to relax and slow down, Amos, when his description of how he was describing forest therapy in the beginning of just being held by a guide and being able to slow down. We offer folks a series of sensory invitations that they're welcome to really do in any way that they want. I think also by contrasting it with what a hike is and what different outdoor activities are can really help clarify what we're doing. I love to learn things about nature and go on hikes, and forest therapy is this very different practice. And as Amos said, it's also very simple and accessible. So some of the, you asked about the range of experience, and I was starting to say just about relaxing, getting in touch with our senses. That can sound kind of simple and like not maybe even that interesting, but I'm remembering a woman who came on one of my walks, and we were in the very first invitation of the walk called Pleasures of Presence, that's really about a sensory connecting with our different senses. We go through the senses one at a time. And after the invitation that lasted about 15 minutes, she was in tears, and they were good tears, but tears. And she shared, I was so grateful she felt comfortable to share this with the group. And this, it goes back to what Amos was saying about we're sharing our stories after the invitation. And she shared that about a year previously, she had lost her husband. And this was the first time this invitation where she had was really starting to feel like connect with her, just her simple senses, because she had locked it all down because of the intensity of what she was going through and intensity of what she had to hold together during her husband's illness. And so this is a place I do a walk once a year, and she's come back every year for this program. And so just really beautiful things. And I guess part of that story is the simple sensory connection and relaxing. But there's also this bigger part to that story of this moment of transformation, if you will, of kind of her realization of that and processing of her whole experience. And even in this little tiny space of the program, moving to a different frame of looking back at that experience of her husband passing away.
Wow. Yeah. Amos, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Well, one of the things that I think people experience is, paradoxically, at first they may experience anxiety.
I was just going to bring that up. Yeah.
One of the reasons for that is because they're not getting the dopamine hits from being on their devices and being in their ordinary routine. And so there's actually, I think, a dopamine withdrawal at first. And that is experienced often as a kind of a antsy anxiety. And you see people searching around, looking for some kind of stimulation. And pleasures of presence does give opportunities to connect with the very simple pleasures of being in this place called here, in this moment called now, in the forest or whatever natural setting you're in. And so I believe that produces some dopamine hits too, but it's a different nature, the different way that comes in. And they're also experiencing some boosts in the processes of well-being as their nervous systems recalibrate.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the big areas of research. Forest therapy is what happens with our nervous systems. How do they reset? How does that affect our well-being and so on? One of the things we do in the standard sequence is after pleasures of presence, after getting people kind of oriented to what is their immediate sensory experience, we walk very slowly, usually for 15 or 20 minutes. And the reason we take that much time to walk very slowly is to give the cycles of anxiety time to roll through at least three different times where I know this well. I'd start my walk and my brain starts looking for all the other things I should be doing. That's what its cover story is. There's things I should be doing. What the real story is, what could I be doing to be getting my dopamine hits right now? And we give a simple invitation, which is just notice what's in motion as you're walking. Use all your senses to notice what's in motion. And that gives the mind something to come back to anchor to. And so you come back to noticing what's in motion, and then the next wave of distracting thoughts comes up. But usually, by the time we're done with pleasures of presence and what's in motion, so we're a good 45 minutes into the walk, and people are now in the groove. They're now in the moment. They're moving slowly. They're getting used to that kind of movement. And that's when I think some of the really important things can happen for people. I'm just thinking of a woman. When he asked me this story, a woman called me once and said, "Hey, I want to do a forest bathing walk, but I don't want to be in a group. Will you just take me out?" And I'm like, "Okay, let's go." And so she drove about an hour and a half up from where she lived and met me at the trailhead. And we went on a walk. We had a pleasant time for a couple of hours. And then she went back home. And about a week later, she checked in with me. I said, "Okay, well, tell me what's stuck with you from that walk. Did it make any difference to you in any way?" Because I'm really curious about this. What happens with people who go on walks? And she said, "Well, yes, I've made some changes in my life." "Oh, well, that's interesting. What are they?" "I left my marriage. I quit my job. and I'm moving to another city. Now, this was pretty big news, right? These three things. Here's what I think. She was on the verge of doing all of that. Like, forest therapy didn't make her do any of that.
Yes, totally.
But it connected her, reconnected her to what was really important in her life and in her process, and somehow gave her that perspective she needed to make the commitment to do these things that were really important. And the way I would summarize that process is, I would say, it's a process of remembering who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And in the day-to-day of our busy lives, the patterns that we're in, we tend to forget who we are, and we tend to just be constantly responding to whatever is expected of us, whatever we think is expected of us, and whatever we need to do to get our dopamine hit.
I so appreciate you saying that. Once again, like, there is nothing, what's the word I'm looking for? There's nothing new or like mind-blowing about this practice. It truly is so simple and so hard to do. I have to say, when I began my cohort to become a guide, our teachers do these facilitated walks for us, and we do it over Zoom, but you go into nature and you do them. My first walk was so uncomfortable. It was like the worst 3 hours of my week. I was so uncomfortable. I was so anxious. I was like getting angry. I found all of these things coming up because it is really hard to sit still with yourself these days. And you can really go from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep with no connection to your inner self, your intuition. From the moment you wake up and start scrolling and you go into the bathroom and you bring social media with you in there, like, you have no space. And for me, what forest bathing and what this practice really is creating space to reacquaint yourself with yourself. It's like so simple, but it's really uncomfortable for the modern person in today's day and age. I'm sure that I'm not the only person that's had an experience like that on a walk.
No, thanks for sharing that experience, because I think it's really important that people know that. You may not go out on your first walk and get blissed out.
No.
You may be anxious, angry, and having a compulsive search to get back to whatever is the ordinary thing. And this is one of the reasons why I say you need a guide, for one thing.
Totally.
Because without a guide,
I would have gone home. I would have quit.
You'll just go back to the car and do, or you'll just turn it into a hike or something. You'll turn it into something other else. And you need to go at least three times, because it may take three times before you start noticing some of the benefits that you really enjoy. And I think for me, this is one of the questions that I have for researchers is, if I'm designing an evaluation, I'm just doing a pre and a post for one walk, like a person, that's all they're ever doing, I believe I'm going to miss almost all of the important data.
Yeah.
And can you share a little bit, Maria, about if and when that shifted for you? Like, was it on another walk or the that kind of experience? You mentioned specifically anger, and I think you said anxiety.
Yeah, that first walk.
When did that shift with forest therapy for you?
You know, it's very interesting. When I found out that, because I had never been on an ANT-specific walk before I signed up to be a guide. I'd gone forest bathing before, but not in that capacity. And I was like, are you kidding me? These walks have to be 3 hours? Like, who has 3 hours or 2 hours to do this? But I think what I really appreciate is you need that space. So for me, it took shorter and shorter with each walk. So even on that first walk, I spent the first hour and 15 minutes anxious and angry. But after each invitation, after each drop-in, after each kind of exercise that you do throughout this structure, by the end of it, I felt calmer, you know, even in that first experience. But then the next time we went, it was 30 to 45 minutes of anxiety and anger. And then the next time we went, it was 15 to 30. So I found myself being able to relax into the spaciousness as a, you know, type A, overstimulated, very organized and programmed person. It got easier and easier, but it definitely took several walks. And it definitely took some reframing of my ability to give myself time. and to not view a three-hour experience as self-indulgent or greedy, and actually like quite necessary and a gift and important work. Because I think also in today, we're societally programmed to hustle and get things done efficiently and effectively and not really do anything for 3 hours besides sleep, right? Like, we don't really do anything for that long. Even at work, you're doing smaller projects in the course of a 6 hour work or 8 hour work day. So that's definitely been my experience.
I want to just jump in on the 3 hour experience. My absolute favorite thing to guide as a guide is a 3 hour walk. And for the past 3 years, I have been in the spring and the fall guiding a 4 week series of 1 hour walks.
That's cool.
When I first started, the person that asked me to do it, I was kind of like, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy this as a guide, but I'm usually up for trying anything. And it has become one of my favorite things. And I can also report that in the terms of like results for people, or what I notice in my participants, is that over the course of 4 weeks with these 1 hour sessions, they have equally meaningful, relaxing, transformative, or whatever their experience is, the same percentage and types of experiences happen, sometimes in the first 1 hour.
And that makes sense.
Yeah. And I kind of keep it very simple and don't like really shorten anything overall. We just maybe do fewer things in that 1 hour. But it's so, I feel like there's space. This sequence is the standard sequence that ANFT has come up with, is just so effective that I feel like doing it in this format, and as we partner with the land, results are still there. It's really quite astonishing.
Yeah, I think also the repetition of knowing, okay, I'm going to only do 1 hour, but I'm going to do it for 4 weeks. And I think for getting first timers in, it's much less intimidating to do a 1 hour, have a good experience, do it four times, and then say, okay, now I'm ready to try a 2 hour, or now I'm ready to try a 3 hour, than someone going on 1 3 hour, being totally irritable the entire time and then saying that's not for me. You've both mentioned research. I would love to dive into this, because when I was researching for my book, I read Dr. King Lee's book, Forest Bathing, and all of the research that he's done out of Japan. And it still blows my mind that there's proof that you can increase cancer killing cells in your body by doing this work, and all of the stuff like Amos mentioned about the nervous system. So Amos, can you speak to a little bit of the research for the go people who want the science behind this? What is some of the research that's coming out now that's really proving the positive effects that this can have on our bodies?
One of the things I noticed about research is I've got a Google search agent that picks up new articles on forest therapy and sends them to my email, and it's at least four a week now. So when we started, there wasn't much research. Dr. Lee and Dr. Miyazaki and a couple of people up in Korea were doing almost all of it. Now it's quite a global phenomenon. It's become quite accepted in academia, I think, as a legit field. However, the questions don't seem to vary much. It's more like the methods of research are refined. The questions really have to do with what happens with our nervous system, our immune response, and our moods when we do this. And the news is all pretty positive. Our moods improve, our creativity improves. There's this mechanism that the Japanese identified of the phytoncides, this kind of chemicals that are emitted by trees, certain kinds of trees, especially in certain seasons. And when we breathe those, taking the phytoncides in is correlated with measurable changes in our nervous system. So, you know, I've done quite a few walks in Japan now. I've been over there several times and made a lot of friends. And typically what they'll do at the beginning of a walk is they'll do a couple of measures. They'll measure blood pressure, and they'll take a little bit of saliva to measure salivary amylase, which is an indicator of stress response. And do that at the beginning, do your whole walk, do it at the end. And by the way, their walks are quite different than ours in most ways. And then you compare the pre-post. And some of the stations where they do that, they have what they call a forest therapy basis that have purpose-built trails with clinics, essentially, at the beginning and the end. And some of those, they have many thousands of observations, pre- and post-observations that they've collected over time. Now, for me, my experience has been a little bit, perhaps, unusual with that, because according to my pre- and post-measures, one way to read those is my stress increased. But I don't think that's what they're measuring in my case. What they're measuring in my case is engagement, because I'm so interested in what they're doing and what this trail is like. And I'm studying the practice.
You're studying the practice. You're not actually like really relaxing into it.
So if I have stress, it's not the kind of stress that they're measuring. However, you know, stress is associated with so many different diseases as one of the factors that contributes to diseases. And we live in cultures that are chronically stress-inducing. This was one of the big motivations in Japan for them even starting this practice. And the research was the amount of stress that people were experiencing there was really affecting health on a nationwide basis. And they had a phenomenon of people who work in the offices, they call them the salaryman culture, right? Dying at work. And they invented a word for that. What is, I think it's called karoshi. That's this phenomena, the salaryman dying at work. And they thought, you know, we need to do something about this. And so they had quite a bit of research support, and the trails that they built there are quite wonderful. Now, I feel like the kinds of outcomes that I'm hoping to see and do see sometimes are not studied very well because they're a little bit outside of this initial framing, which was this is about stress reduction and improving immune response. No, that's one of the things it's about. And it's a wonderful thing that it's about. But let's go back to the story that I just told about, you know, this woman who made big changes in her life. What was going on there? And how often do things like that happen and somehow woven into people's experiences with simply reconnecting with themselves?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times we say, oh, this is nature connection. Yes, and you can't connect with nature without connecting with who you are. And this is the relational aspect of what we're talking about. Everything happens through remembering relationships.
Yes.
And so, you know, I speak at conferences quite a bit, and I'll often, this will be a theme in my talks that I give. I'll say, here's the things that we're not studying that are important questions. Mm-hmm. I'll be in a room full of researchers from all over the world. I'll say, do any of you want to partner with ANFT? Because I'll hook you up with guides all over the world and opportunities to do this study. And so far, we haven't gotten many bites on that. Nadine, you just sent me something, though, that you did some kind of assessment of how often ANFT is being mentioned now in the research studies that are coming out. And you've heard me talking about research so far, but what do you have to add to that, Nadine?
Well, I think that question of, you know, what, in addition to the physical, psychological, and physiological things that are happening to us, which are wonderful, what kind of transformative things aren't being asked about. And as you've also said already, Amos, they can happen during a walk, but often they happen after.
Yes.
And so, yeah, right. That kind of research question of what kind of, you know, have there been any transformative effects that have happened during or after a walk?
And it may be a long time after, and it may take quite a while after a transformative impact has occurred before we become aware of it, right?
Yeah, that's much harder to measure.
Yes.
That's much harder to measure. But I also think it's the unique identifier of nature therapy, because if you look at the other wellness practices that are out there to reduce stress, breath work, yoga, meditation, Joe Dispenza does like amazing research on meditation, does not invite you back into yourself the way nature therapy does. Like, I could go take a yoga class and do some breath work and be
more relaxed at the end of it, but I won't necessarily be more acquainted with myself at the end of it, because you can let your mind run in a workout class or in a yoga class. And there's something about our nervous system, our body being in nature, that allows us to return to ourselves in a very different way than a lot of these other wellness modalities. And how the heck do you study that? Like, that is so interesting. So is ANFT into research too? I actually don't know the answer to this question. Are you conducting research, or you're really just focused on certifying guides so that there can be more people on this earth who usher participants through this experience?
Well, as a company, we don't have the resources or the expertise to be researchers. We're practitioners. So there's the research part and the practitioner part. We need to talk to each other. It's one of the reasons why I'm go to multiple conferences every year, is to keep up that dialogue between practitioners and researchers. However, we've had quite a few researchers complete our training and who are now guides, including physicians, university professors, and so on. So they will do research, and sometimes we'll chip in a little funding for them to maybe buy equipment they need. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to get too involved with them, because I want the research to be
unbiased.
Yeah. So one of the things that I ask them to do and hope that they'll do is use the standard sequence. Because here's the thing. A lot of the research, they'll talk about what the outcomes are and what the measures were, but they don't talk about what actually happened during the walk.
Mm.
You know, so they don't say, they don't have a clear procedure. And in Japan, there doesn't exist anything quite like the standard sequence.
I was just going to ask, what's the difference between, you mentioned, if you go forest bathing? I mean, Japan's incredible. You can literally get a prescription from a doctor to go to these, I think there's like 28 or 35 medicinal forest therapy bases across the country and go on these medicinal experiences. What is the difference between a ANFT experience and a Shinrin Yoku experience in Japan?
Well, in Japan, it has more of a conversational and educational feel. So you'll be strolling along a trail slowly with guides who will stop every now and then and give you a little bit of naturalist information about the plants and talk about the phytoncides and so on. Probably go farther than I would go when I guide a walk. They may go a kilometer or two, and I'm not going to go that far when I'm guiding. And I remember one walk I went on in Japan where I was with one of the very famous researchers who was guiding. And it was like, yeah, we just had a nice conversation as we walked along the trail for a long ways.
Mm.
And then another walk I went on in Japan began in the parking lot with calisthenics. And I thought, oh, this is so Japanese and I would never consider doing that. But you know what? I felt really good on that walk.
Yeah,
as it turns out, the calisthenics really got me into my body and got my body ready for that. And maybe we should be doing that. Another thing in Japan is almost every walk will have some station along the way where there will be some yoga of some kind. And
interesting.
And we have, I think there's one of the categories of people who take our training is yoga teachers who want to have some framework for taking their practice outdoors. So I think that happens all over the world where yoga gets incorporated. I don't personally do that myself, except one time in Japan, our yoga had to do with trees, with saplings. So the trunks are about this big around. There are a whole bunch of them. The invitation was really simple. Just go and hang onto the tree or move with the tree and just move your body and stretch it out. And I do that. If I find a tree, because you know what? That feels really good. That the way the tree moves with you, or actually moves you if there's a breeze, you can hang on to it, lean against it. Okay, so there's some overlap and some exchange, but cultural differences. Also, my understanding is that with the companies that certify guides in Japan, they're typically certified for one trail. So you got trained to guide this trail in this forest therapy base, and that's all the permission you have. Well, one of the strengths of that is like one of the trails I've been to several times, Okatama. It's the same guides. I've gotten to know them. You know, I really like those people up there. And, you know, I think Akasawa Healing Forest, the same thing. And so that's a strength, but it's also a difference. And as I mentioned earlier, very often the Japanese practice will involve some kind of pre and post measure for their ongoing research. In the ANFT way, we very specifically and intentionally don't go into doing naturalist education because we want to keep people as much as possible in their bodies, not in the heads. Mm-hmm. Naturalist education is often has a ecological slant to it where the experts are talking about, well, here's, you know, the oak tree and here's the acorn woodpecker and here's this interesting relationship they have where the woodpecker actually is at the leading edge of the forest as it grows. And okay, that's all really interesting. But as important as it is, it's not what we do.
Yeah.
We may do a little bit at the end if the guide has some naturalist expertise when we're sitting at the end of the walk and we're having tea and having open discussion. But instead, we just give a series of invitations. The guide is not speaking very much. We gather periodically for a circle where people can just stand and take turns sharing what are they noticing. Now, the Japanese don't do that. I have heard that they're starting to do that because they're learning from us. This is what I've heard. I haven't gotten out there and verified that myself. And but also just for contrast, Korea, which has this really fabulous nationwide network of forest healing centers, they also have a very different practice from the U.S. and from Japan. And one of the things I noticed in Korea is that many of the walks are on these very nicely built, elevated walkways. So you can't actually interact with very much, like to scoop up some soil and smell it. I remember at one of the healing centers, there was a section of trail where we could do that. I showed that to the guides, and they had never done that.
Wow.
They had never just scooped up the soil and smelled it. And I had an epiphany that day. That soil in South Korea at that healing had a very particular smell. And I realized smelling that, you know, every place I've been, every forest, its soil has its own scent.
Mm-hmm.
Like I experienced that at one of our guide gatherings in Croatia, where we were in a village on the coast of the Adriatic. And I realized that the air and the water and the breeze of the Adriatic has a unique quality to it, unlike where I grew up in Santa Barbara.
Totally.
And I think I would not have noticed these things if I had not had a long practice of doing this forest therapy and immersing myself in my senses. You just wake up and start noticing more. Mm-hmm. So also in ANFT, we give invitations. And an invitation, part of the structure of invitation is I'm going to invite you to do something in a certain way, but if it doesn't work for you, you can decline or you can modify it or find your way into the invitation that I give so that it works for you. Most of the outside of ANFT for therapy places, I think, still use the term exercises. So I'm going to give you an exercise. For me, invitation is one of the really important, what would I say, pedagogical insights that ANFT brings to the field, along with some other really important ones, like the way of the guide.
That's been something I've been kind of surprised at in my certification process is it's an extremely rigorous certification process. It's 6 months every week, tons of modules, tons of, you know, assignments. Like we're learning a lot. And there's so much flexibility in what we're allowed to interpret these rules or frameworks as. One, particularly for me, which for me is very important, is I don't really live near forests right now. I moved from 5 acres in the Catskills, where I lived in the forest and was like a woodland creature. I moved to South Florida, and I don't want to go into the forests down here. Like, there's like snakes.
Yeah, I don't like those forests down there either.
No, thank you. But I'm doing all of this at the beach because there's this like beautiful collection of sea grapes. And so you're able to, you know, be in the shade and do these things. So we had, as part of our certification, the students had to do a guided experience. We're in the middle of a freeze. Literally, all of us were indoors on Zoom, and we did a 3-hour forest bathing experience. Yes. Indoors with our houseplants or looking out the window at the moon. So I think that's important because I think one of the things people get intimidated about, and I certainly know me 5 years ago would have been intimidated, is like, I don't want to go into the forest and get dirty and like see a bear, but I'll go sit on the beach and do these invitations and experiences. And, you know, it can be, you're open to interpretation. The sole purpose is like, get your ass in nature, like get yourself to a natural setting, go experience nature, have this open framework to do so and feel the results in your stress and also in your emotions, which feels very different.
Well, I want to hear from Nadine on this too, but I want to just mention a couple things. You talked about the rigor of our training. I think that's one of our strengths. Mm-hmm. In this field, as we provide probably the most rigorous training that's most anchored to a coherent philosophy and methodology. And part of that is I don't want to train you to guide the way I guide. Mm-hmm. I want to train you to guide the way you guide. And a lot of our training is for you to discover that. How do I guide? And then regarding forests, one of our trainers, Vix, lives on the Great Barrier Island in New Zealand, and she does her work on the coast. And often her work involves going into the water, taking her groups into the water and interacting with dolphins. So yeah, cool. That works. People remember that when that happens.
People feel good after doing that, I would think.
And the dolphins probably feel good, right? And the dolphins bring their medicine. Anyway, Nadine, what's your perspective on this stuff?
Well, before I share a little, I want to remember a story that I've heard you share a couple times, Amos, about waiting for somebody at a mall in California and hanging out with the tree in the parking lot, because I've heard you say, like, anywhere people and nature can meet can be a place where...
That little tree helped me so much, really recalibrated my whole nervous system before I went into the mall.
That can be helpful. Malls can be stressful places. A tree is helpful.
There are malls, in my experience, malls are this kind of hellish liminality that I would prefer to avoid if I can. And I think people are voting with their feet on that. I'm not the only one who feels that.
I'm voting that too, yes.
Because how many malls have been closing, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, this story that you're referring to, Nadine, it was just a little tree again, like this big around. Poor thing. It had a very small soil opening that wasn't covered with concrete. And I just put my hands on it and leaned and talked to it a little bit. And there was a light breeze and it moved me around a little bit. I just closed my eyes and enjoyed being with that tree. That's all it was. Just enjoying that sense of movement. Anyway, go, Nadine, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Well, one of the threads in that story, I also feel like, Maria, when I was reading your book, I was pulling out some of those same threads of spending time with the plants and the beings in our house, which is that relief, part of that relational aspect.
Yeah. Can you speak to the relational aspect? That's been mentioned a couple of times, and that's a very unique approach.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Amos spoke a little bit about it earlier, and I think that we're not just going into, in fact, I like to try and use the phrase with nature, mm-hmm. as opposed to in nature. And just being with opens that door for relationality. And I think Amos was speaking to it earlier when he was talking, well, both of you really, when it was being with the environment that we're in, but also with ourselves and with each other as a group. And it's part of this combination of things. But then also as a guide, part of our approach and philosophy is also that we're guiding in partnership with the land and really, you know, offering some ways to interact by invitation, which I agree is an incredibly important framing that my participants are really welcome to follow their own ways that springboard off of the invitation that I offer, and to that the land and they kind of have their own interactions and own relationships. Also touching on the differences between Japan and some of the walks that we guide or the training that we do is we do some, when it's a guided experience, some of the experience we're together as a group doing invitations, but also we have time alone that people go off for 15 or 20 minutes on their own. They're with the land. They often follow their own kind of pathway to where the land invites them to go. And then we come back for that sharing, that integration that is optional. People are welcome to share with just their presence and silence if that's what feels right for them. So the relational aspect often starts to emerge with just through the simple sensory interaction. That's often one of the doorways in. And then as we kind of connect with our own either enjoyment or curiosity of that, we get even more familiarity, and this kind of back and forth starts to emerge, which can, it's hard because I don't want to like name it or put it in a box, but it can just kind of be present in so many ways. Of I often experience it myself as just like attending and being tended, of being able to just be with. Amos, how would you add on to that? Or,
well, one of the training models we have that you may have heard, Maria, I don't know, it's all medicine is relational. And what that means is that, to me, what that means is that when I use the word medicine, I'm referring to my inner essence that brings some kind of gift into the world. And that gets drawn out in the context of relationships. So, until there's a relationship that calls that out of me, it exists as a potentiality, but it becomes active and kinetic in the context of relationships. And one time I was in this redwood grove that I'd taken on myself the job of grove tender. Beautiful redwood grove, about 30 acres in the California, and owned by a public agency that was just neglecting it. And so I went in and, you know, did what I could to tend it. A lot of that involved hauling out years and years of trash that had accumulated from people partying in there. And one day I was in there sitting with my back against the red soft bark of one of the coastal redwood trees there. And I heard in my heart a message from the trees. And it's a very important message. I hope that you and other people who are listening to this can hear this message. The trees told me this. They said, look, we see you taking care of this grove. We see you hauling the trash out. We see you caring for the animals here. They were referring to one time when I found a little fawn trapped under a branch and I helped the fawn get out of there. And they said, but we have just one request. Please. I'm like, okay, tell me. Sometimes don't bring your trash bags. Sometimes don't go around looking for work. Just come and be with us and enjoy us. That's what the trees were asking for. That's relationship.
Right.
Not only that, that's at the heart of reciprocity, is to be in relationship. And I had been tending to that grove long enough that I could hear its voice, and I walked away that day with the question, who's tending who here?
Yeah.
Right? And so that's when we talk about tenderness here in that word tenderness, tending, right? And so
that's beautiful. I feel like so much of the training too is you're not the therapist. Nature is the therapist. You are the guide. You open the door. Like, this isn't really about you as the guide. Like, you're opening the door to allow for this relational experience to happen. And you're kind of getting out of the way.
Yeah, really important. Yeah, so that's one of the things we say is the forest is the therapist. The guide is just opening the doors. And that's a reference, a little peek into what we call the way of the guide. And that, as you know, is a big, long topic. What is the way of the guide? Yeah.
Yes, Nadine.
Well, I just wanted to circle. I feel like this is reminding me of, as we were talking about some of the kind of health benefits and this relationship, I feel like within the health benefits, there's, you know, physiological and psychological, you know, mind and body, but there's also this other big, big bucket that we were touching on of belonging and transformation. And I feel like this is also really connected to the relational aspect of being in relationship with, I'm looking out my windows as I'm talking to all of you, all of the living things on this planet, that we are a part of that, and feeling a sense of belonging, because I hear that over and over again, especially from students. And I think what, especially during the pandemic, one of the things that I have always seen on my walks, but was even more highlighted, of how important this time to come together, have these kind of experiences and time with the land, and then be able to share them and restore also. But I feel like there's part of why this is so impactful is because so many of us have fallen out of also being in relationship with all of the being with the natural world.
There's a great module in the class that two things that have really stayed with me so far. One being a very short video on this concept of leave no trace, and how you go into the, we're all conditioned to go into the forest and leave no trace. Like, obviously, of course, like, don't leave your shit in the forest, bring your stuff back. But we are part of the forest. So this idea of leave no trace doesn't really apply to the relationship. Like, we are there. We do leave something there, and we leave a part of ourselves there. And that interaction. And the other thing, it's, I don't even remember what it's called, because it's not part of the sequence, but it's like sometimes at the beginning of each module, there's like a thought, like a little like seed that is planted.
Co-emergent practice.
Yeah. One in the beginning was to like say hello to all the trees and beings around you. That one experience, we forget that everything is a living being, and, you know, that trees are beings and stones are beings and rocks are beings. And just the one practice of when you go for your walk around your block, when you go to your car to go to the grocery store, every time you see a being, to say, oh, hello, hello, you. Like, I just walked down my street now like a little, like a little fairy. Hello. Oh, hello. And it makes you see the world differently. Amos, what were you going to say?
Well, that, for me, in my experience, that goes into the realm of ceremony. So when I guide, I'll show up early to the trail and I'll walk the trail and do, I call it a greeting walk. I'll walk the trail and I'll speak to the plants and the stones and the trail and along the way. And I'll say why I'm here. I'm happy to see you. I'm asking for your help. Please support the people who will come with me here. Help them find what is needed for them to find today, each individual, and help us to all be safe. Okay, so when I do that kind of walk, it's renewing and sustaining a relational aspect, but it also has a ceremonial dimension to it. That I think is a part of doing this work in a good way.
Yeah. And ceremony. We need more ceremony. We need more sacred in our life now. And there is no better place to feel sacred than in the forest, truly.
Yeah. In my opinion, every walk we do is a ceremony, but I don't know how many of the trainers would agree with that.
Yeah. So totally. I could talk to you guys forever. I can't believe we're at an hour already. I'd like to close asking each of you a different question. So, Nadine, where are you located? You're a guide trainer, but you're also a guide. Where can people find you? I know you've written books too. So tell us everything about you and your practice.
Yeah, so I'm based in Acton, Massachusetts. And my company is New England Nature and Forest Therapy. And people can just Google and find my name or the company name. And as I mentioned at the very beginning, when I was getting into this practice, I was walking with my dog, and that inspired me to write a book on how do we do this practice with our dogs, which on our own with our dogs, which is a different rhythm, includes many of the same elements, but our dogs have a different rhythm, and found through doing that, that it actually really deepened my relationship with my dog. So, and that book is called Forest Bathing with Your Dog. So people can learn about that and find me through that.
I love that. We'll make sure everything is linked in the show notes. Amos, you talked about, you know, your commitment to your first 10 years that ended in 2022. So you're in your next 10 years. What is your vision for the future of ANFT, the future of this practice? What are your visions and hopes?
Well, I had another ceremony around that 10-year mark where my intention was that for 10 years, I've lived and taught the way of the guide. I now set that aside and I take up the way of the guided and I become pilgrim. So for me, pilgrimage is a big focus for my life personally. So I've been able to, in the company of guides, of ANFT trained guides, I've been able to do a couple of pilgrimage walks on the Camino in Spain.
Wow.
And in Portugal, walk from Nazaré on the coast to Fatima inland. And I view life as a pilgrimage, which is a kind of a container for alchemical processes of transformation. So I've been writing and developing a practice that I call alchemy of pilgrimage. And I have on my other monitor here on the screen right now a book that I'm going to take for print today to get a few copies made to take to our guide trainer gathering that we're having in Portugal in a couple of weeks. And the name of it is Metabolizing the Strange, A Pilgrim's Guide to Alchemage.
Oh.
So that's my interest now. And I think I've realized that in the practices that I do and taught, there's kind of four distinct practices that I'm interested in. One is place tending. I talked about the redwood grove.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's forest bathing, which when someone comes to get guided, that's mostly what they're looking for, is just what is forest bathing. Then there's forest therapy, which can go into really deep territory as a practice, deeper than you know, expect, and maybe want, right?
Mm.
And then each of these can be like a threshold, an opening into the next. And the next one is this alchemage. And alchemage is a profoundly transformational practice that may be necessary for our times. Because we're in time right now we're right on the cusp of huge ontological changes where everything that we thought we've known about reality is about to get smacked in the face. And so that's why the book is called Metabolizing the Strange. And so that's all for me. I live in Arizona now. I live in the Central Highlands. I haven't found forests here that I really like, though I like the nature and the mountains, but I continue to travel when I can. I've had some very significant health challenges that have limited my traveling quite a bit, but I still get to see forests all over the world. And one of the things that's become really important to me is my friends all over the world. There are people in this field, many who are not trained by ANFT at all, the people who I've gotten to know and work with, and who that web of relationship is really powerful and meaningful. And through that web of relationship, the forests are working through us.
Yes.
So when I was in Japan, last time I was there, I was leading a workshop, looking out a window at a mountainside covered with forests. And I realized, in mid-sentence, I realized, wait a minute. I'm sitting here taking credit for developing a practice, but I didn't develop this practice. Those trees put that into my head. Look at them giggling out there. They're like, look how clever we are. The humans think they invented this, but no, there are some that have just enough memory of how to listen to us that they receive it and bring it into the world.
Well, I think too, and you've mentioned, if the same practice is showing up across cultures, like you said, in Japan, it's different flavors, Japan, Korea, the States, there's nature worship, nature relativity in so many different cultures and so many Everywhere. Different time periods.
Yeah.
That's the proof of the pudding, right? It's like everybody inherently Everywhere. Knows this. It's just about Right. remembering.
Everywhere. Yeah. I really had a deep experience of that in Lithuania recently when I went there. And walking through the forest and also talking to the people there, realizing that cultural connection to the forest is so deep. And when you go through the forest, you see they're carvings, wooden carvings of like forest beings. They're sort of like totem poles, right?
Mm.
It's everywhere in Lithuania in the forest. And I was very surprised. I thought, Lithuania, why do I want to go there? And now that I've been there, I'm like, I want to go back to Lithuania, largely because of the feel of the forests and the forest people and the connection of the people there. And this is, so you're right, it's all over the world. And I think
even
that
in the
culturally,
our indigenous people knew this. And then we forgot it, you know, but it's been here too and forgotten. And now we've got it.
They still know.
Yeah. So, and where can we find, if people are curious to go on a forest bathing excursion, ANFT, you have this great map with all the guides and all the trails. So tell us where we can find you, your book, ANFT, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, my book is available in any, you know, like Amazon or whatever, Your Guide to Forest Bathing. Look for my name. It was the first one out in English about this. There are at least two other books with the exact same title.
Okay. We'll link the right one in the show notes.
Yeah, look for the one with my name on it, because according to my mother, it's the best one. And Nadine, what can you say about how do people find guides and so on?
Yeah, I think the ANFT website, so it's anft.earth is the website. And on there, there's a, in the menu, there's a place that's find a guide. So that's one place. And then there's also a great website called Forest Bathing Finder that they have a relationship with ANFT, and they have many, 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 many walks. I mean, you can see where people are certified. So that's a great place as well. And yeah, when Google forest bathing or forest therapy near me, hopefully things will come up.
I can't wait to be, there's no blip, right? There's no dot on your map right now for South Florida where I live. So I can't wait, you know, once I'm fully certified to be the dot on your map there. And this has been, thank you so much, Amos and Nadine, but Amos for creating this beautiful practice, Nadine for stewarding and teaching so many guides. I'm sure you taught many, probably my teachers. And thank you just for doing the work to bring this to as many people as possible. And I just feel so lucky to be one of your students and can't wait for many future conversations about this topic in the future.
Thank you, Maria. Gratitude to you and the work you do. And to you too, Nadine, for being such an important part of this journey. And to all the guides and all the forests and all the forest people.
Yes.
Gratitude.
Thank you, Amos. And thank you, Maria.
All right, plant friends, I hope this conversation sparked something in you, a little bit of curiosity, maybe even some resistance, like I shared in today's conversation. Whatever it is, I hope it gives you a little nudge to step outside and look at the world a little differently. Give yourself a moment to forest bathe, whether it's in your backyard, your front yard, your local park, or maybe even your local forest. But remember, it doesn't have to be difficult. Allow yourself to slow down, belong here, and connect. And connect with the beings that surround us and often go overlooked. You can find all of the links to ANFT, Amos, Nadine, and all of the certified guides near you in the show notes. The website will show you if there are any certified forest therapy guides near you so you could go on your own forest therapy walk. And I will follow up soon with more info on when and how I will be leading digital forest therapy experiences for our community. It will be that we all basically log into Skype, but we all go to our own natural setting. So it's not virtual like I'm showing you pictures. It's like we all get on a conference call and we all go to our own natural settings. And I just walk you through this structure that we've been talking about. It's so cool. It's so fun. I love that I'm learning something new and it really has me looking at the world through a different lens. So I'm very thankful to Amos for creating ANFT and to all of my friends in my cohort, the Wood Duck cohort of the ANFT Forest Therapy Guides. As per usual, my plant friends, I hope that you keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.